Left will be the funny thing, and then right will be the inappropriate thing.
Oh, yeah. It's right, because it feels right.
That's right. Wait. I gotta use that. Okay. It's just the upvote, downvote thing is gonna, like, eliminate half the guessing.
Mm-hmm.
I just need to remember that left is joke, and right is inappropriate. So.
Well, yeah, because it has to do with the feelings. Like I said, if it feels right, it's right. It's dumb enough you might remember it, okay, Dylan?
It's just dumb enough. Playing with the soundboard can be fun, but we should just roll into it. How are you guys doing? If I'm being honest with you, I can't think about doing anything else but playing Monster Hunter. It's all-consuming. It's weird.
That's pretty funny.
This must be what it feels like when... I'm trying to think of an example, because what I'm going through right now, right, is this really niche game that I played the shit out of in high school, right? It became popular with Monster Hunter World, right? And then, I mean, popular is a bit of a stretch, right? It's popular by today's standards, I guess. But then when this game came out, it's like everyone's fucking playing it. And for a lot of people, they're playing it for the first time. And I'm like, what inspired them to do this? Where did these people fucking come from?
Trust me, when I'm playing online, I can feel it. I can feel the freshness, for better or for worse.
But let me just put it into perspective for like the dear listeners at home. But first, let me go ahead and just remind you all: this is a value for value production. And if you don't know what that means, there's a handy dandy website called valueforvalue.info, and it basically is a suite of tools and magic internet money that allow us to make the show with all the cool stuff that you might expect from like a Twitch show, but without all the greedy middlemen in the middle.
Let's say you've been playing a lot of Monster Hunter World, haven't you, Vic?
Yep.
Is it true that it's the easy mode Monster Hunter?
Sort of.
Sorry, I remember that one from being from a review. I think it's IGN's review.
It's really hard to say, because honestly, it's one of those moments where the more used to the series you are, I mean, the game hasn't really ultimately changed in its fundamentals in probably a good 15 years. There's that, but at the same time, the past few games genuinely have been kind of easier. And I think it's in line with the modern generation of games.
Do you think it may have more to do with, like, what is it? The quality of life, the better hardware kind of thing? Because, like, that's what happened to Dark Souls, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's why 2 was, what was it? 2 was the significantly easier one, right? Or was it 3?
I would say 3. 2, okay. 2 had a lot, well, 2 fundamentally was easier, mm-hmm. but it had a lot more jank.
I've also heard people talk about Monster Hunter Wilds being easier. And I see where they're coming from. But, like, I don't think it's in a bad way. Because, like, think about this, right? Like, a lot of the grind from old Monster Hunter, like Freedom Unite, which is one I have a billion hours in, right?
Yeah.
Was really awful, like, routes and rotations of collecting, you know, bugs and other, like, craftable items that you need. As well as killing the same monster over and over and over again for that final carve. Maybe you cut their tail off or something, right? But, like, it's that final carve and the random odds that you get all the parts, and you need more parts than they drop to make the full armor set. So it's like, with Monster Hunter Wilds, like, you can inflict wounds on monsters and then explode those wounds for a little bit of bonus damage. I mean, maybe it's a lot for some people. I play Greatsword, so I don't really notice, like, nothing is bigger than the great sword swing. Like,
fair.
I hit him and it did 300. Like, I've been doing that since minute one. Like,
right, great sword.
It's like 300 damage, 300 damage, 300. Oh, it died. Like, you know, that's just the norm for me.
But that was also the norm with all great sword all the time.
Yes, in all the Monster Hunter games. So it's like, I think the wound system is nice because I can hunt a single monster like maybe once or twice to get all the parts I need to build, like, the full armor set, maybe the weapon. Honestly, like, I still fought the monster. It still was tough. But, like, there's so much convenience.
The end game will still require you to fight a monster. Like I think at this point I've fought the end game is the end game monster, like, over 50 sometimes now. just because in order to facilitate the in-game loop, you don't need the monster's specific parts, but you do need high rarity, high, I don't know how to call it, high, like, material value parts. So you will still run these monsters multiple times. You will learn their moves, and you'll get better and more efficient at it, and so on and so forth. But I think where Wilds falls shorter than, like, because, again, I think World, Iceborne, Rise, and Sunbreak are all relatively easier on the scale of Monster Hunter, and I think Wilds is on par, realistically. It's just that there's only two in-game bosses.
Like, that was a bit of a misstep on Capcom's part.
So it's more of a lack of content than anything else.
Yeah. That's pretty much where I think, it's really, once you get to endgame, after like 15 runs of the of each of the monsters, you've pretty much figured them out. Like, maybe that, like, newer players will have a lot harder of a time, potentially. And there's a couple other fights in the game that are kind of rough. But ultimately, the only ones you're going to run enough times for it to actually matter are just two monsters, really.
Yeah. So before the game launched, Capcom already did announce that they're going to patch in more monsters into the game, right? But the roadmap was kind of light. Like, it didn't go that far into the future, and it only showed, like, what, three monsters, right?
Yeah, we know we're getting Midgetsune. We're getting we think it's Archtempered, I should say, which is a step above what we currently have.
I don't think the management at Capcom expected this game to sell as well as it did. Like, I'm sure the Monster Hunter, like, developers put their heart and soul into the game, right? But, like, I want to share some numbers, if now is a good time.
Yeah.
So, according to Capcom.co.jp business, blah, 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 I'll put the link in the show notes, the corporate investor relations page, this is what they tell stockholders, right? We have numbers of, like, their sales. So, and these are, I'll be honest with you, I followed the Wikipedia citations to find this, right? I'm not a genius, but as of the end of December 2024 is what we're talking about here. So beginning of the year, right? Monster Hunter World, that's two Monster Hunters ago, right? 21.3 million units sold, right? And then Monster Hunter Rise, the last Monster Hunter game, that's for the Switch, and they made a PC version, I think, either at the same time or later. That was, actually, according to their website, it's cross-platform. They had PS4, PS5, I didn't know that. That sold 16.7 million, so not as many, right? But for those of you who are unfamiliar with Monster Hunter, the design philosophy behind Rise is it was a Switch-first kind of game. Like, part of what made Monster Hunter so popular is, like, the net cafe culture in Japan, where people would go meet up in person to play video games wirelessly, or physically on the same console. Like, that was
that's how I used to play the older ones.
Same. This is like my high school, like, net cafe game. We didn't call them net cafes. We met up at people's houses because those businesses don't exist in America, right?
At people's houses, school. Fuck. Sometimes we would walk out to a middle ground area and sit on a fucking park bench and play.
Yeah.
Like, so yeah.
We played it with our PSPs, and it used what is called ad hoc, which is like, we're not connected to Wi-Fi. We're connected to each other, but we're in range. It was really nice, right?
Like hardware-based peer-to-peer.
Yeah. So Monster Hunter Rise is designed portable first, Switch first. Like, the map design and the monsters and the flow is like that of a portable game that you would take to a net cafe, whereas World was meant to be played at home online, right? It was definitely a very different Monster Hunter game. And Monster Hunter Wilds is a lot more like World than it is like Rise.
Yeah, something also to add, too, about the sales numbers. I forget the exact sales numbers. For the DLC, well, I say DLC, the expansions for these Monster Hunter games, it'd be like way too long for me to go into that, way too in depth. But for the most part, they are separate games, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're attached on to like Sunbreak for Rise or Iceborne for World. They're functionally, they're separate games. Mm-hmm.
They're included in these sales numbers on the investor relations page. Okay. Yeah,
I was gonna say the separated number. If a memory serves, Iceborne is about half that of the of world sales, and I think it was like 30% or 40% of the sales for Sunbreak. I looked it up last night because we were talking about it, but I don't have it in front of me, so my numbers might be a little off. But just to kind of put into perspective, though, Sunbreak came out a couple years after Rise, so that's an even smaller sales number.
Yeah.
For them to go on.
So I don't have the sales number handy, but I'm positive it is bigger than all these numbers, right?
I think they said 30 million on their Twitter post. Again, don't quote me on that. I don't got it in front of me, but I think that's what they said.
So if I was an executive at Capcom, I'd be looking at, you know, Team Monster Hunter and be like, hey, you need to put more shit in your roadmap and you need to come up with a baller expansion plan for the inevitable once and done DLC, right? Not saying they need to like make the DLC now, like they should, you know, update what we have, but you know, that's what they always do, right?
Yeah, give us a year. I was saying, honestly, what they need to do between title updates is just release like further hard modes. Like, don't wait for a title update in April, which is when it's coming, to give us Arch Temper. Just fucking give it to us. It's not that hard to just scale up the monster's health and damage. Make it a, you know, like, oh, if this monster touches you, it deletes you. It doesn't matter what armor you're wearing. So then it'll allow players to maybe have to swap up the way that they're handling their builds, and it'll give them something else to do while they wait for the three new monsters to get dropped. Not to mention, three new monsters is too little. It should at least be like five or six. Yeah. And they all need to be end game. And I should have to learn all of the monsters they're dropping, not just probably one of them. Let's just be real. For those who are not familiar with Monster Hunter, Megitsune, however that you want to pronounce it, is kind of like a filler monster. It's a fun monster. It's fun to fight, but it's not going to be the top of the top badass monster. You know, maybe one weapon might want its armor set. I'm not gonna have to learn its moveset. I'm not gonna have to learn how to fight it. Probably move. I'll eat those words, but I'm speculating. It'll just be a toss in throwaway monster because they already got it designed. It was one of the flagship monsters, and I don't know if it was flagship, but it was like a poster child of some kind for Rise. So they already have it made, they already have it designed. They can just tweak it and throw it into Wilds, and it's just free for them, which I don't want to be that pessimistic about it, because Wilds is genuinely a fun game. I think, honestly, after all said and done, and even before the expansion drops, there'll probably be several hundreds of hours of worth of content in it. And buying it now, you're pretty much getting like the early game of a live service game, even though the game isn't really a live service game.
Yeah, it's just updated a little bit with time, but like...
And that's normal. To be fair, even like the older Monster Hunters were kind of like that to some extent, except for until they became like portable only. It's kind of hard to explain how that all used to work, but the long and short is it's kind of a normal thing for Monster Hunter. So,
Yeah, and like if we weren't recording this podcast right now, I'd probably be playing it. Like I'm not nearly as far as you, because I have way less time. I suspect at the rate that you're playing, like you might burn out once you get to the top. It sounds like you're already at the top.
Yeah, I've been here for a bit. Honestly, I think the only reason why I'm not burning out, although I would say I've slowed down just because there isn't a whole lot left for me to do. I don't say I'm burnt out, just kind of like waiting. But
waiting for group.
Yeah, I think part of it is that like I put a lot of time into World. I put a lot of time into Rise on both the Switch and on PC, and I've played the series since I think it was like Portable Third. If memory serves, I could be wrong on that. I think that's the one I started with. But I've been playing the game for a fucking long time. I got it locked in. I kind of like breezed through, even straight through to the final fight of High Rank.
You got that muscle memory. I got the same thing going.
Yeah, it really didn't slow me down at all. And that's fine. I expected that. Honestly, once I picked up the weapons and I figured out the little, like the newer things about them, I was like, oh, okay. I already got this. I got this down, right? Like,
and honestly, I'm sure there's a bunch of new players playing Wilds for the first time that are just getting their ass handed to them. And listening to everyone saying, oh, they made it easier. Like, what are you smoking? This fucking monkey keeps farting on me.
I was definitely throwing up. So I've been throwing up quests. So you can do these things called investigations. It's their way of basically allowing for quests to be freeform. But they're honestly, they're not really freeform. This RNG is all fuck. But if you find a good one, you can host it online for other people to get the rewards, which is kind of like the good guy thing, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, other people do this, whatever. So I'm posting up the hardest quests that I can find because they give the best rewards most of the time. And I haven't been able to clear a single one in multiplayer yet. People just getting slammed left and right. And not to shit on our friends. We have a couple of friends who are not as versed. I think most of our friends have played World. But, they, you know, they didn't play Rise or World. And
World was their first, yeah.
Yeah, and they're getting slammed just to start. So
I wasn't like some kind of badass or anything. Like, I have a lot of muscle memory and hours in the chair with greatsword, but like, I'm no hero, right? Like, I will get slammed too.
But it's just one of those ones, like, that's why I don't want to necessarily call the game easy. I think that it really is just genuinely that, like, okay, is it easy for me? Maybe. But is it easy for, like, a new player or a player who's only maybe got, like, let's say, like, an average 100 hours in the entire series? No, they're still going to get a hit. They might breeze through, like, low rank, potentially, you know, depending on how much of a gamer they are. But, like, there's still some difficulty to be had. And if you're worried about that, and you're a long-term player, you probably already experienced this with World and Rise. It's no different. You're going to breeze through it until they slam down some title updates. They're already teasing potentially like a new Black Dragon with the story, which I won't dive into too deep in case anyone's worried about spoilers.
I haven't finished it anyway. The story never mattered, though. The
story doesn't really matter, but they did put a little bit more effort this time around. People online are saying that it was like utter dog shit and the worst it's ever been. And I'm like scratching my head like, brother, have you played Monster Hunter game before? The story was like, I don't even think it's on the list. Like before launch, like, oh shit, fuck, we have to add one of these. So it's pretty good this time comparatively to the previous games. It's not perfect or great, but it's okay.
Let's assume a lot of our listeners maybe haven't picked this game up yet. It is fresh, brand new, and not everyone has played a bunch of Monster Hunter, right? So let me just kind of describe that point of yours, right? So like the first one I played was called Freedom 2, right? Yeah, it wasn't the first one. It was what I had available to me on the PSP.
Well, to be fair with you, the first one never came out in the West, so.
Yeah, fair.
I think the first two or three didn't, if memory serves. Which were just re-releases of one, I should add. They're not like two or three, but either way, I digress, sorry.
I didn't even know that. But regardless, I think the story in Freedom 2 and Freedom Unite, which Freedom Unite was an expansion to 2, it was a new game that you go buy that wasn't full price, and it was the same game you just played, but has more shit at the end, right? And yeah. I think you can convert your save file, I don't remember that part. But like that's how Armored Core did it. Like, for example, if you beat Armored Core 3 and you bought Armored Core 3 Silent Line. Silent Line is just a DLC campaign to Armored Core 3, but we didn't have the internet back then, right? So it's like, oh yeah, import your save data from the last game. You can have all your shit, all your progress, but you're playing a brand new campaign as a brand new Raven. Like, that was the idea.
It's funny to think, too, that people would consider that predatory in the modern day, but in all reality, it's how they had to do it back then. They didn't have much of a choice.
Yeah, fighting games, they had it just as bad. Like, that's the reason why there's so many different versions of Street Fighter. It's like, oh, yeah,
yep.
Here's Street Fighter Alpha 2. Oh, here's Street Fighter Alpha 2 Turbo. Here, blah, 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 blah. So on and so forth, right? Tekken 5, Tekken 5 Dark Resurrection.
Kingdom Hearts had that going, too, for a while. Where,
oh, yeah.
There's at least, I think it was 3 or 4 titles that you'll see pop up in a list that are just expansions to the previous game.
And it's like, they have such a weird naming convention. Well, they don't have a naming convention. They just name their games whatever the fuck they want.
Well, yeah, I was about to
it's
say,
so confusing that those poor mothers buying games for their children wouldn't know.
The fuck is 1.5 Remix?
Is that a new game?
Have you played that one yet?
Resident Evil started it, I think.
I know what you mean.
Yeah, yeah, where it was like
Code Veronica, and then there was a re-release of Code Veronica, and
let's listen to this. This will be funny. So I just looked it up on Wikipedia. So in order, starting in 1996, we had Resident Evil, Resident Evil 2, Resident Evil 3, Nemesis, Resident Evil Survivor, Resident Evil Code Veronica, Resident Evil Survival 2, Code Veronica,
yep,
Resident Evil Gaiden, Resident Evil The Remake, Resident Evil 0, Resident Evil Dead Aim, Resident Evil Outbreak, Resident Evil Outbreak File Number 2, that's with a pound sign, Resident Evil 4, Resident Evil Deadly Silence, Resident Evil The Umbrella Chronicles, Resident Evil 5, holy shit, it gets worse.
They went wild with it. And to be fair with you,
I'm only halfway through the list, I'll stop there though, but
I think one of the reasons why people might not realize that is because I think of the spinoffs, really only 0 and the first Code Veronica were the only two that really popped off. That's why I found it really funny when people were like, I can't believe they're remaking 4. They should have remade Code Veronica next. And it's like, have you played Code Veronica? Also, do you realize there's 2 of them? Like, No. They should remake 4, and they should forget all the spinoffs even existed. Even though, to be fair, some of them were okay. There was a
DS one.
I love how you mentioned that, because I'm looking at this Wikipedia page, and Code Veronica and all the major title updates are the only ones that are bolded.
Oh, really? That's funny.
It's like the anonymous Wikipedia editors agree with you, Victim. the other ones really don't matter.
Exactly. Well, yeah.
Well, the biggest problem is it turns the, like, genuinely, if you start looking at the spinoffs, the canon gets more fucked up than the movie canon.
The movie canon's pretty bad.
The Resident Evil canon is really wacky, and I think that, you know what, this is a long fucking rabbit hole, but...
Well, it's another Capcom TLDR, game, Rick.
Yeah, true, fair.
I don't know why Capcom keeps getting away with it. Like, they have such the most convoluted lore, like, between Monster Hunter, Resident Evil, what's another one, Devil May Cry, right? Like, shit's all over the place, but all of their games are so cool.
Devil May Cry's not that weird, it's not that confusing, sorry, it is weird. But with the other titles, I think the reason they get away with it is because they are effectively continuations of older titles. Like, Monster Hunter, what do you do in that game? Hunt monsters. Right. You know, Resident Evil, while sure the name doesn't say it, but like, it's you shoot zombies and try to escape a city. It's like...
Well, to be fair, the Japanese title is Biohazard.
Or Biohazard, fair, yeah. But like,
and it's that's how they're made. Like, I get it. Like,
yeah, it's like, it's like, think about like Mega Man. The fuck do you do in Mega Man? You run to the right and you shoot dudes. And at the end of the day, these games are really simple, and they've been built upon and expanded upon, and they are much like more nuanced, much larger titles than they ever were. But at the end of the day, the fans know exactly what they want. You know, Mega Man, they want to run right and they want to shoot dudes. Doesn't matter how high the graphics get.
I have a lot of respect for Capcom. They are in the business of creating video game-ass video games.
Yeah. That's why I said, ultimately, while the story, I think, is okay in Wilds, I think there's some enjoyment to be had there. You're not going to give a flying fuck about it. If you're leaving a bad review because of the story in Wilds, you were never going to play Wilds in the first place.
So, with Wilds, right? I forgot we were going somewhere with that.
All comes full circle.
It all comes full circle, boys. So, with Wilds, I didn't play a whole lot of like World and Rise, I must admit. You know... If you want me to turn in my Monster Hunter fan card, I will. But I was late to the party on those because of the platforms they were released on. All my time is on the PSP, right? I bought World when Iceborne came out because that's what everyone had. And when you buy Iceborne, it's like, hey, here's like level 0 armor that's Iceborne ready. Oh, by the way, the first quest in Iceborne is harder than the rest of the base game. So you never need to craft anything. And so, but you have to play through the entire story of World to get to Iceborne. So I was like, all right, I guess I'll wear this broken ass, dumb looking armor set and get through all these systems that I hope were released with time or they were just confusing to begin with. Right. And like, yeah. I didn't get through it. I got like to the second village and I was like, I'm just rushing to catch up, and it's not enjoyable. Like,
honestly, that was one of the biggest failings of, I think, even Rise did it to some extent. It's just like, people want to play the game and get through it. And Monster Hunter isn't that competitive of a game, even though there are competitive avenues. I mean, fuck, they even host tournaments for players to like do speedruns with preset loadouts. And they're cool. Those are fun to watch. But, like, the vast majority of players just want to play the game. Mm-hmm. It's like, imagine a single-player game where, you know, you waited a year to buy it, and now half the fucking single-player game is, like, free, but you still have to go through it. And, like, it's not really any gameplay to be had, but you're still forced to go through it, sludge through it. That's not fun. They just let players play the game.
So something I have to appreciate, having that experience with World, like, something I really like about Wilds is the camp design. Like... The base camp in World is like a really cool looking like MMO hub, right? But like it's so crowded and hard to navigate that I kind of hated it, right? And I only unlocked one other town that was like way smaller. It's like, shit, why couldn't it have been like this? But whereas in Wilds, now I haven't beaten it yet, so no, this could change. But like there's no really large camps, right? I'm pretty far, right? Like there's a couple of like places where people live that are sizable, right? But like where the camps are, where all the vendors that matter are, like, it's so much simpler that I don't get lost. And maybe it's because I'm early or on time this time. Maybe it'll get more complex as, you know, title updates come, and maybe they'll add more vendors, more systems. Hopefully not. Right? But it's like, I couldn't stand the base camp in World, and it was like really awful. So in Wilds, another thing that they do really well is like when you go on these quests, like I know this was sort of present in World. You can give me more detail on that because I don't remember this, but I talked to you about this and you told me it was present. But like you can just go. You can just leave town and start exploring the adjacent area, right? With Rise and all of the portable games that I am familiar with, you are gated by a loading screen to leave town. In the case of Rise and all those other old games, you have to like accept a quest, which might be a free roaming, no objective quest. But you have to pick the zone you're going to out of a menu and you load into it, right? And it's like, that's just what they had to do. I never faulted them for it. But having an entire like landscape, a continent, whatever this place is, an island, I don't know, where you can literally walk from the base camp where you landed to like the furthest reaches of the game. Like that is so fucking cool. Have you ever chased the Palico that revives you when you cart?
No, I haven't.
He does not despawn. He runs all the way back to the nearest base camp.
Oh, shit.
That's why when you faint in Waveria, you get carted by two Palicos that go back to the camp. Whereas if you cart in the Windward area, the first zone, right? They go back to that camp. It's just the one cat. And he has like, you can't talk to him. He doesn't have a name because he's not talkable. But like, he runs all the way back to his little designated spot. And you can follow him all the way there. He'll never despawn.
Honestly, that's something that Wilds has kind of nailed too. Like, there's a lot of things. Like, for instance, how many in World, it had plenty of endemic life. Mm-hmm. Which is like the little tiny like bugs or like little tiny animals that like you can't even hit with your weapon or whatever, right? But like it didn't really matter that they existed in World. I mean, there was a couple of things that tried to interact with them, and you had to like capture them for like a couple of side quests that ultimately were just largely just skippable. But in Wilds, they incorporated them, and I think that might be why the content is so. You this time around, there's like entire ecosystems that they've tried to forge. They tried to give like the world like a livable thing. Like if you walk around the camp, which like I have the game open right now, I was just doing a little like something you don't need to hunt monsters for. But like walking around the camp, they all have like predetermined like walking things. And sure, that's not like crazy. I mean, fuck, I could fire up Oblivion and they probably have a better lived-in experience world experience. Sorry. But the fact that like this is the first time Monsters ever done this, the fact that they put this effort forth, which is entirely unnecessary. Like if it was just static shops and a static quest giver, the same way that like you know its predecessors were, people wouldn't have really batted an eye at it. But I think that's where a lot of that like production time went. Like you can see like there's like monsters walking out, like little like they call them small monsters for people who haven't ever played that effectively don't. Pose any threat to you, but like you can kill them for resources and whatever. They got like birds flying on them, and I'm sure if I open up my journal, they explain what those birds do, and I'm sure there's a journal entry for those small monsters and so on and so on.
The game expects you to accept that the Hunters Guild, the people that aren't swinging the comically large weapons, are actually like contributing.
Yes.
And so studying, researching, and like writing down the behavior of these animals is expected.
Yeah, and while, you know, previous titles have, like, had, like, story bits show you a lot of this stuff, I think this is the first time where it almost feels like they are, like, pushing you towards or they're incentivizing you to do it. And again, anyone who's played World, if you've played it super thoroughly and you did every little thing, you're going to tell me, like, wait, Victim, but you could do that in World, too. But at the same time, it's like, you didn't need to. I beat the shit out of, like, each patch that I played in World, and I never once interacted with it. In fact, I only knew Wigglers even existed because of the Joe Cat videos. I had no fucking clue. I had no idea what the fuck that was. I was like, what the fuck's his hat? And he's like, oh, it's a monster art thing? I'm like, oh, that's cool, but the fuck is it? And then, you know, looking it up, I was like, oh, I can capture those things? The fuck are these?
Yeah, that funny thing on his head.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, that's a, oh, okay. I had no idea. It's because it just it wasn't required of you. And to be fair, it's not really required of you in Wilds either, but it feels a little bit more like pushed, or it's like, hey, if you do this, you'll unlock something. Mm. Or you might unlock something, I suppose. It doesn't really tell you what you'll unlock half the time, but I don't know. It just it feels like you're more involved in the world and the world that they constructed and put together, and kind of the way that you were talking about with the cats running back to their posts. You start to kind of just figure where things are and what they are, as a result of a lot of this stuff. So in a weird way, it's also like a learning curve. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh shit, I need to go get giant vigor wasps for this quest. Oh, I remember where I saw those. You know, I ran across those.
And if you don't remember, you have more tools to like consult your map and like fucking find them. And also, can we talk about the mount? Like,
that too.
What a quality of life that is. I remember one of the things I hated the most about World was that fucking forest map that I don't know if it was the first zone or the second zone, but like, as soon as I fought a big monster in the tree branches and got knocked down to like the below area, like I was ready to quit the quest. Like I was like, that is so much walking to go back to where the monster is. Will it even be there when I return? Right. Yeah. Whereas,
World, you could get the great, I think it was the Jaggies or whatever the fuck they were. Through one of the cat quests, which again, I never did any of them. But even then, it was like on rails. It had a preset place it was going to take you, and you just kind of had to accept.
Yeah, with the sacreds, the mounts, it's like, oh, well, if I get knocked down to a below zone, I have some faith that I can quickly get back up.
Exactly. I think world design in general is a lot better in Wilds, too. Like, don't get me wrong, it's really fucking cool the first time you climb that forest canopy and you just go all the way. I'd be like, hell yeah, brother. I can hear Snake Eater playing in my fucking headset right now. But at the same time, and then like after like the third time, you're like, all right, motherfucker, where's my elevator? I can't fucking do this anymore. I think Wilds does it a lot better. Like there's a lot of like little cool hidden areas that you can go to. And they reward you for finding them because you can put camps there that won't get destroyed by monsters. And you know, there's actually some like a level of rewarding gameplay to finding these little zones. But you're never required to go and find them. You're never required to go through like little niche paths to get to places faster.
I need to do it. Like I've did all the story quests in the forest zone, but I quickly moved to the next because I've been trying to get to the high rank so we could play together without wasting your time. Right? Like, I've only been fighting side quests to get new armor if I start to struggle. Like, right now I have the Rathalos armor and sword. Kind of recently fought my first Rathalos. Like, it was not that long ago and where I'm at.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's that Rathalos specifically. It's like a special variant. But, like, it's a good armor set for where I'm at. And then it's also the first armor set that I upgraded with the armor spheres. I don't know if that's a waste of armor spheres on the low rank, but, like, I was tired of carding. Like, I got really far.
You'll get a fair few.
I got all the way to the damn Nursilla, that second spider boss, before I carded for the first time. And I was really proud of it, too. But then after that, like, the floodgates are open. Like, I never lost a hunt yet. I haven't done that. But, like, I've had a lot of close calls. It's kind of exciting, actually. Whereas I remember in Freedom Unite, like, that Tigrex, like, killed me so many times. Because he's, like, so nimble, and it's, like, really hard to get a greatsword swing in that he actually walks into.
Early game Tigrex, early series Tigrex was kind of earned his place at being that mid-game filter.
Yeah.
Which sucks, because in World, he was big and dumb and stupid and really easy to maneuver around. same in Rise. It was kind of a joke.
I think another thing that makes the game a lot easier is the focus mode. Like, what that means for me as a greatsword player is I can change the direction I'm swinging, like, before I release the charge.
Yeah.
Whereas in the old game, it's like I had to line my body up with the monster and then charge. So, like, I wouldn't charge very often because it would never land. So I would just get a big sword, like, as much damage as I can get, and just not do charge attacks. I'll still do the overhead swing, the triangle attack, right? But, yeah. Like, I wouldn't have the luxury to charge it. But now that I can change directions before I swing it, like, I charge all the time. That's why I keep hitting for, like, ridiculous damage. Really nice, actually.
It's like when when Elden Ring came out and that changed the meta for the Dark Souls games. Jump swings.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know why I love Monster Hunter so much, but, like, I couldn't get into Elden Ring. I don't know. It's like, they're not that different.
Well, I mean, I think the fundamental gameplay design is different. Yeah, they're still the same, like, game. Like,
it's a hard game where you're supposed to try a lot, right?
Right, but, like, Monster Hunter positioning is far more important than Elden Ring or any of the other Dark Souls games. You can just play good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, I'm sure there are a few people who, you know, are at me when I say positioning's not nearly as important in those games, but you can brute force Elden Ring or Dark Souls if you're good at, like, parrying or blocking and shit.
I could expand on that, actually, because, like, in Monster Hunter, you are rewarded for preparing. Like, if you bring fire elemental damage to a hunt of the monster that's weak to fire, you will benefit. If you bring items like energy drinks or armor, what are those called? Not armor sphere, the one you drink.
Oh, the armor drug and demon drug.
Yeah, right, those. Right. You can bring those to the fight and be prepared. You can bring hot drinks to the cold zone, so that way you don't take a certain type of stamina drain, right? Like, you're supposed to prepare. And right. The game enables you to learn as much as you want, to prepare as much as you want. Whereas in Elden Ring, like, you might get invaded by a mystery build at any moment. You need to just be good at the game.
Yeah. And honestly, I'll echo what Rick said, too. I think positioning in Elden Ring, well, sure, obviously, I think any action game, you can argue that positioning has some place in it. I would say, in the Souls series in general, positioning has never really been, like, a hard necessity. Maybe in certain boss fights it is, but in all reality, your ability to make your current position useful is just how good you are at the game. Or I guess in some niche cases, your build. Like some mage builds are maybe a little bit more reliant on it, but...
Oh, there are certainly builds.
I agree with you, though. It's just one of those moments where in Monster Hunter, if you position wrong... Like, I guess with some weapons, you could just hit the dodge button at the right time and be fine. But then there's other weapons like hammer or greatsword or switch axe or, you know, something bigger.
Any slower. Of the charged weapons.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
If you're positioned wrong, you're going to get hit. There's not a recourse to this. You are getting hit. That swing, that big old fucking tail, that big old jaw is going to smash you. And in Elden Ring or Monster or any of the Soul Series games, realistically... That's not ever really a hard truth. I mean, it still probably will, because you may be bad at the game, but if you're at least, like, mediocre at the game, you're going to know that, like, oh, okay, I'm going to dodge away from that or into it or otherwise. Which you just can't always do in Monster Hunter. And in all reality, that's a more modern Monster Hunter thing, too. Iframes being kind of the way they are is relatively newer.
Right. I never got the impression Monster Hunter was an iframe style game. It was more, don't be there.
Yeah.
You know, a la Armored Core. Right. Like, Armored Core doesn't technically have iframes, if I'm not mistaken. It
no,
certainly
we just
doesn't
move
feel
fast.
Like it does.
Just move faster.
Exactly. But that's my point. Like, you know, because iframes in games, I think, overall are pretty new. Like, outside of fighting games, maybe. But like I
yeah,
say
like,
new
within,
where
like,
I say like
last...
in the last two decades, this is a turn of the millennium kind of game
yeah,
design thing.
I was gonna say like last like 10 to 15 years, and it's not like they didn't exist before that even, but like they were made much more popular.
Well, Dark Souls I think really got catapulted it, right? Like, and now
yeah.
Every Metroidvania style game, that's a requirement for the combat, because it's no longer slow and plodding. For those games, it is fast paced. You gotta, you know, dodge around, do it's always rolls.
Dodge
too.
Through their sprite to get
yeah,
to the
exactly.
other side of them and hit them.
Exactly. So I think that's a you know, it is a game design that has changed. And that back when you get to the editing and get back to the beginning, which was just Vic and me, that was really what I was talking about. It's like I've heard that this Monster Hunter is easier. However, I suspect that it has more to do with the fact that the limitations in games have opened up, right? Like, it's like the guy who made Final Fantasy always wanting it to have been an action game.
Mm-hmm.
The technology just never existed for it until, I don't know, very fucking recently. I
yeah,
guess
like,
you could say
you
could have
done it back then. You could have done it, but then FF7 would have turned out like Urguys. Like,
right. Like Kingdom Hearts was like the test bed, I argue, for that, because it still took Final Fantasy what another decade and a half, 15 years or so for I think the you know I think 2000 is roughly when Kingdom Hearts came out, and FF15 was the first live action Final Fantasy, right?
I mean, Final Fantasy 13-3 is kind of close, but because you're playing a single character. Instead of a party.
Isn't that one more like Dirge of Cerberus, though, where it's not really feeling like a Final Fantasy?
Kinda. Like,
okay.
It's still, like, active time battle, but it's, like, it's so, like, focused on the one character that it's like, it's almost 15.
And we can even go further back than that, though, if you think about it. Like, the progression of combat in these games, like, what was it, 8? Was it 8 when we had the first, like, turns happen at different times? And if you don't act,
ATB, yeah, the active battle, the ATB gauge, right?
That was 4.
Yeah, 4 is when we first trialed it, yeah. Although we didn't, okay. I don't think we had 4 in the U.S.
It was technically 2. It was called Final Fantasy 2 in the U.S.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry, I didn't remember which ones we skipped.
Yeah, it's the one with Cecil and Kane.
Yeah, I mean that's further back than I thought. But like, clear that this was the evolution. This was the progression that they always wanted to do. And I feel for people that are like, oh, I wish Final Fantasy still had turn based games. I get it. Turn based has kind of a it's a niche now that exists, and Final Fantasy no longer fills it. But that's not to say there aren't games out there that still fill it. And so I always find it's like, well,
some of those games that fill it are made by Square Enix still.
That too?
Well, like Dragon Quest or Saga.
I was gonna say, what is it? Is Triangle Strategy theirs? I know that some of those pixel art games.
Yeah. Octopath Traveler.
Octopath Unicorn, is that one theirs?
No, that's Altus.
That's okay. Altus.
I forgot. I don't actually know.
To be fair, either way, I mean, it doesn't have to be Square either. It's just like, there's a lot out there. There really is.
Fanboys are going to fanboy. They want Final Fantasy to play like Dragon Quest, and I get it.
Yeah, that's fair. But like, at the end of the day, though, it's like Final Fantasy was always going this route. You could see it, and if you didn't want to see it, you were ignoring the writing on the wall, however you want to phrase that. Like, I get it. I don't know. I think being mad about that's kind of weird. It's just like, you should move on. Final Fantasy has moved on, and if you didn't want to move on with it, that's fair. I don't think anyone can force you to like something you don't, but it has moved on, and it's kind of just weird to be mad about that, I guess.
100%.
Or to, like, get hung up on it. I guess being mad about it's fine, but being hung up on it and, like, pretending like being hung up on it somehow is going to make them change their ways when this is how it was going to be from the very beginning. Or, well, pretty close to the beginning, I suppose. Yeah, considering Final Fantasy IV.
It's what the creator wanted. Yeah. He wanted an active game, and as technology got better, he found ways to simulate it without it actually being able, and then he finally got to do what he wanted to do. But the kind of my tangent, or why I went down that tangent, is I think, the Dark Souls had that same kind of thing going on, where in like 2 and 3, as the games got more fast-paced, frame rate got unlocked and things like that. Because Dylan and I, and probably you too, Vic, I know Dylan and I have watched this together with people like modding Dark Souls, the original, and things are locked to that 30 frame rate. Like, once you start upping the frame rate, animations get fucking, the whole game fucks up, basically.
At 60 frame rate, if you go down a ladder too fast, you'll just clip to the bottom and fall to your death.
Right. The whole game
is fucking hilarious.
Yeah, after you start, unlocking the frame rate. Subsequent ones, I don't know when exactly Square changed the system for it not to be that. But the point being is that the game got more fast-paced, so like enemies got tougher, but you had more tools to do it, and arguably at some point the power dynamic shifted. I think you said it was 3 roughly, where the power dynamic shifted to be definitely in the player's favor once you got good.
Yeah. I mean, even then, like, Bloodborne, I think, is a really one of the big, like, essay topics that always gets brought up in a lot of the videos that you'll find on why Bloodborne is so pivotal and so, like, memorable, why it became basically the number one Soulsborne games, despite not being a Dark Souls game, was just simply due to the fact that they took out all the shit that were basically traps in these games that would, players could figure out a way to play with them, such as, like, shields or big heavy armor, and they just said, okay, what if we just made the gameplay experience different, and it's now variable based on only your weapon? Or like your sidearm, I guess, could also influence it a little bit. And then they just built the game based on that. And people started to realize that if they played the Dark Souls games that way, people that maybe previously hated them or didn't like them, they started realizing, oh, I just was playing them wrong. I was playing them in a way I didn't like. The way I liked was always there. I just didn't know it. And that's what people attribute Bloodborne to being so good was about. And that is effectively what you're getting at, is it was like a level of player agency that they just slowly pushed in over time. And Bloodborne and Dark Souls 3
kind of like we're the culmination of that.
Do you think Monster Hunter Wilds might be having an Elden Ring like popularity moment? Because like,
yeah, I think yeah,
that's what sure. It looks like.
Because I try not to bring it up too much because I don't want to. I consider myself a Monster Hunter old head, even though I know people that are way older in the genre than I am. Hell, I think Dylan might even be a gamer too behind me in that realm, mm-hmm. or ahead of me. However you phrase that, he's played a game that's older than mine, my first one. I don't know how else to phrase that. But like a lot of people that genuinely look at like even as early on as like fucking Generations, prior to World, and they look at that and they think, oh, that's garbage. Hell, actually, and I think but try the Wii title. People looked at that and thought, oh, that's garbage, because it wasn't what the previous Monster Hunter was. And it's become kind of a staple of the series for fans of, like, for instance, people that were hated on Rise are now saying that Wilds isn't like Rise. And it's just like, it rinse repeat over time. Some old heads kind of get jaded like that, right?
Yeah.
And I think that, like, to some extent, there's a fairness to be made. As they remove jank and as they add more, like, movement options and more player agency options to these games, do start to lose a little bit of that difficulty if they don't pivot properly. Okay, fair. I don't know if they pivoted quite the best as a result of, but I think that removing a lot of jank was, and it kind of like in Rick's example with Final Fantasy, it's just necessary. Mm-hmm. or in not even so much necessary, but it's very good. It's what the devs wanted. Who the fuck designs a game that's supposed to be just clunky, like clunky and janky, and people are like, ah, but that's the magic of it. It's like, is it? You want the dev to create like a subpar video game just because you have some nostalgia for that?
Fantasy Star is actually another good example of that, because the like if you played it happened in Universe and in just all of the previous ones. Like if you played any of the previous Fantasy Star games, you know exactly the kind of stuff I'm talking about. Where it's like it just like you commit to a swing, right? Like your light attack, and you do the light, and you do your light attack, and you got to do it, or you got to combo correctly, which is just waiting to press the button again. And they did it in Phantasy Star Online, they did it in Phantasy Star Universe. As soon as we got to Phantasy Star Online 2, New Genesis. Sorry, back to the titles conversation earlier. But yeah, in New Genesis, though, like, they really opened up, and it's just, like, you know, way different gameplay loop, or different speed of gameplay.
Much faster, yeah.
Right, and so that's sort of the thing. Right, and that, I think that's what people are getting confused with when they're saying the game's easier. Yeah, the game probably is a little bit easier, but you can play the game a lot more the way you want, right? Like, in the two Monster Hunters ago, when they introduced the Insect Glaive, right? Like, that was a game changer for maneuverability.
Yeah, and then in Rise, the Insect Glaive maids were mad because everybody could mount the monster now with wire bugs.
Yeah.
And now everyone can mount the monster with a little bit more effort by jumping off their horse. That's actually a bird. Yep.
The point being with it is more player agency. Well, like, and Joe Cat made, you know, call back to him again with his wiggler head. You know, he made some, they were joking videos, but, you know, where he was oiling swords with whatever he could find because they had, you know, taken the oils away. And then they gave, like, the being able to use items, you know, the quick bar items or whatever with every weapon when it used to just be a sword and shield thing or whatever. You know, people who play Monster Hunter know what I'm talking about, even though I'm getting it wrong.
Right.
Because I never did. But I know that there was some agency that was specifically down to sword and board, and then they gave it to everybody else. Yeah, I think it was in the Switch game where they really opened that up, right?
Yeah, Rise did a lot of things that felt kind of like they were intentionally going backwards. And to some extent, I always wondered it was like them trying to appease like the people who very clearly did not enjoy.
I don't think that was the case. Like, I think they just wanted to recapture that cafe culture, you know? Like,
but and to be fair, that's possible too.
It's got to fit on a portable.
With a couple hundred hours, you know, deep by that point, by the time Rise dropped, I remember looking at it thinking like, huh, like there's still things from World that exist. Like you couldn't. you know, walk in with like a certain cat things or certain I forget the fuck they were called now, certain hunter tools anyways. But you could find like things that did the same thing out in the map. And it kind of required you to like traverse the map, which in all fairness, I think everyone will agree with me that played Rise, that maybe even still loved Rise, thought Rise was the best. Spirit Birds fucking suck. It's such a garbage mechanic. Very thankful that Wilds doesn't have anything like that in it.
I'm happy that Wilds doesn't have those stupid egg quests. I don't like those. Like,
oh, don't worry, they'll come. There's no way in hell they'll leave them. They're in the game.
Oh no!
So I'm willing to bet they're gonna add them.
Well, we'll see.
But they'd probably be optional. To be fair, though, I feel like I feel like most of what's in the game right now is like not really. I mean, there's a couple that are just like they give you just hunter rank.
Mm-hmm.
But like I think for the most part, most of the quests right now aren't too optional. Like they give you things that are very helpful. But I think once we move past where we're at, most side quests that come later are going to be pretty optional.
Yeah. So I mentioned Elden Ring with comparison, because I was alluding to something earlier. So I was looking at the charts, because, you know, I like the charts. I noticed something weird.
I got a shit on Avowed today.
I have Avowed's chart open. I'm getting there. So
I didn't mean to fully preempt this
Let's talk about Avowed then. All right, so you know, blogger favorite, every paid off journalist game of the year, Avowed, right? Again, these numbers are probably spoofed a little bit thanks to Game Pass. There's probably more than these people playing. Or maybe they're all playing on Xbox, you know, all those people that have Xboxes or whoever they are.
Yeah.
Still in 2025, in the year of our Lord. So on Steam, as you know, I mentioned this last time, the all-time peak, which is in the past, 19,000 people, right? There's 5,000 people playing it right now. Today is the 9th March. Now, all of the bloggers were running defense for this game. Like, it's a success. It's a success, right? Like, it's great.
Yeah, 5.9 million people reached. I like the wording on that.
Reached, not sold. Reached impressions.
Did 5.9 million people see ads? Like, what does that mean?
It's probably Game Pass related. Like, we didn't sell them a copy, but they played it on Game Pass. Ha ha ha.
Real quick aside before we dive into that, how would we, like us three, how would we classify playing a game on Pass? Like, if you're paying monthly for Pass, you're probably gonna try whatever comes across it, no matter how garbage it looks. Like, there's a good chance, like, oh, new game, might as well at least, like, log in and check it.
Oh, mm-hmm. Like, sure.
Would we really count that as, like, someone playing? Like, count that as a metric worth recording?
I think so, because, like, I think part of the business Games Pass... Go ahead.
Sorry, I think what I would do is I would split it. Be like, oh, here's our Game Pass numbers, here's our sales numbers. I know that isn't going to look
they
very
should.
Impressive.
They won't.
That's exactly why.
Yeah.
But I think that maybe they should be required to. Maybe Microsoft does
this is
solid.
One of those things where it's so it's like the stream numbers, right? Like, this is one of those situations where legislation has not kept up with speed of technology movement and business. You know, because, like, I don't know, think about when back in, what was it, 2012 or some shit like that, when Facebook destroyed all news websites basically by changing the way they did their metrics.
Yeah, and like also link previews and stuff, right? Wasn't it in response to they were getting like sued or something by some other country? I think it was Australia.
I don't remember exactly why they did it, but that, like, if you had a favorite website, like, let's say crack.com at that time and they collapsed, that's why. Like, that's when a lot of those websites started being like, could you pay to use our services, please? Because we're dying.
Because they couldn't just get a bunch of click-through ad revenue from platforms like Facebook and then later Google. But in terms of Game Pass, right, I think the business model of Game Pass is partly, like, the games on there. Yeah, sure, you could download a shitload of them, but how many did you play, right? Because, like, Avowed is presumably a 60-hour Western RPG. Maybe less, because it's more of an action game, because there's no open world, right? So maybe it's a 40-hour modern Western RPG, I guess. Well, like, for an adult, that works. It's like, that's actually a pretty big commitment. Like, yeah, sure, it's a quicker play than Metaphor ReFantazio, right? That game is a lot longer, but...
I want it to be a good 60 hours. That...
Yeah. Point is that if you buy all those games individually, obviously more money would be spent. But like,
oh yeah,
you could download that many games, but you're only going to play a couple of them. So licensing fees aside, it's probably fine for Microsoft. That is, it's fine for them.
I'm sure that they get less money per game downloaded than they do, like, if we were to buy the game. Because that's something to keep in mind, too, I suspect, with these
digital games
numbers. Right? Like, because, say, Steam taking 30%. I think that's the market average, is 30% for distributor. That's less than they were paying to distribute a physical copy of a game.
Right. Also, another thing to consider, right, is parents and children, right?
What about them?
For example, I gave my oldest son my Xbox because, remember, long-time listeners will remember, but I had a brief crisis of conscience where I actually bought an Xbox instead of a PS5, being long-time Sony fanboy, right? Totally disillusioned with Sony. I eventually ended up buying a PS5 anyway, but honestly, I regret buying both. But I tried it out, and there's a lot of things Xbox does really well, right? But that's not what we're talking about today. Point is I had one, a Series S. I gave it to my oldest son. It's in his room, right? I had Game Pass before I gave it to him. I kept it. I paid for it for a little bit. All he played that was on Game Pass was Minecraft and Burnout Paradise. So I was paying monthly for two games.
Of course.
That I could have just bought as a one-time purchase. And so that's what I did.
Cheaper too, because like Minecraft is not that expensive. Neither is Burnout Paradise, because that's an older game.
I bought both and canceled Game Pass, and he does not notice the difference.
Of course not. Why would he?
Yeah. He's seven. He doesn't browse the market. He doesn't know what games are coming out. He just plays the ones I put on in front of him. Because, you know, we don't have cable. The entire landscape of how kids learn about products has changed. When I was a kid, I remember seeing the Legend of Dragoon commercial. It's like, oh my god, that looks hilarious. And it wasn't funny at all, that game. No. No, it was very traumatizing, in fact. However, it had a funny, catchy commercial, and I thought it was the bee's knees before and after I bought it. So, how kids learn about stuff today, like, yeah, sometimes YouTube plays ads. Depends on where they're watching YouTube, right? Like, on the kids' version of YouTube, there's way less ads, and all the ads are, like, toy commercials. So it's like, they don't really get a whole lot of video game ads. And the only thing that counts as a video game ad that they even watch, probably kids-appropriate YouTubers that get through to YouTube Kids playing a game and telling you what it is. That's how he discovered Goat Simulator, right? All those kid YouTubers were like, oh, let's play Goat Simulator and make a bunch of videos. They also make videos about Grand Theft Auto 5. I'm not going to buy him that. But, like, they get through the rules of, like, kids YouTube by, like, not using the weapons. Like, they just play with a bunch of mods and it's all goofy shit, right? It's like, you wouldn't even... I didn't even know it was GTA 5 at first. I was like, what are they playing? And then I was like, oh, I get it. It's like, that's why he's holding a banana. Because it's the weapon. So I think there's a lot of that going on. I think there's a lot of parents that will buy a Game Pass for their kids because it's just an upgraded tier of Xbox Live to them, right? They were going to play online anyway. But like, I don't think they're necessarily playing enough of video games such that Microsoft operates their subscription at a loss.
Oh, goodness, no.
Yeah, I think that's the plan that they have. And that's why Sony's service is so much worse. Like, there's only one tier. You either have PS Plus or you don't, right? Well, I guess that's not true. There's a couple of tiers, but all of the tiers come with their version of Game Pass, which is just a bunch of old Sony games and a couple of new things, right? They definitely are losing at the new games part of Game Pass business model, but they have them cooked on the old games because Sony just has a longer history. So there's older games to pull from.
Well, and weirdly, they're not putting the best of Xbox's old games on the list either.
Yeah, it's like, you know, props to them for putting Final Fantasy 13 on there. It's probably the only way now you can play Final Fantasy 13 on a modern console. Besides, I guess, PC, right? It's still totally, totally jank. But, like, with Sony, it's like you can play some of their best games from their past on their version of Games Pass, such as Legend of Dragoon. And Final Fantasy VII Remake is on there, even, which you need to play before you can play Rebirth. So it's like, they're not brain dead, but, like, they could do better. Anyways, Avowed.
Right.
Fuck Avowed.
We gotta make fun of it.
So, not all-time peak, 19,000 people. Let's compare that to World, right? Monster Hunter World. There's 16,000 people playing it right now. All-time peak 6 years ago was 300,000 people, right? Which, actually, I'm pretty sure that's higher than Veilguard.
Oh, yeah.
Let me confirm.
Veilguard, yeah, that's... Hey, what? Remember they They reach so many people.
Oh, yeah. So Veilguard did better than Avowed. Their all-time peak was 89,000. So Monster Hunter World beat them there, right? But this is a niche game that is popular in Japan. So it's like, those might just be Japanese players, right? Like, yeah, it got a lot more attention in the West as soon as World came out, right? But, like, Wilds is such a flash in the pan. Like, it is almost not comparable. So remember that number, 334,000, right? So there's 383,025 people playing Wilds right now, right? In the early afternoon on a Sunday. just today, 24-hour peak, 1 million. All-time peak, 1.3 million, right? That's crazy. And also, the reviews are mixed because the performance on PC is pretty bad. And because the performance on PC is pretty bad, more and more people are talking about the game and playing the game and making content about the game with their consoles. Because there's a PS5 and an Xbox version, and people love those versions. They are fine, right? So it's like, you're seeing the Steam number, and these are disgruntled players that are dealing with, sometimes, performance issues.
Not performance issues.
Let me compare to another title that launched with performance issues, but was widely anticipated. Cyberpunk 2077, right? So it's no surprise that the all-time peak for Cyberpunk 2077 was launch, right? Even though, like, the anime coming out, and the patch right before the anime coming out that fixed all the bugs, and the various new improvements that came after they fixed all the bugs, those were pretty big spikes in player count, but they never passed the peak. But the peak was only 1.05 million.
It's true.
And that game was pretty broken at launch. It worked on my computer. But I can also say the same about Monster Hunter Wilds. Maybe it's an AMD thing. I don't want to just put all the blame on NVIDIA, but, like, NVIDIA's been giving me nothing but problems. That's why I switched. I'm probably never going to buy an NVIDIA card again. I'm very happy with my AMD. and Wilds, with the exception of a couple crowded areas, is buttery smooth all the time.
Yep.
With those exceptions. So, like, what's the deal? It reminds me of Black Myth Wukong. It's like, yeah, sure, Black Myth Wukong had the advantage of, like, the entire Chinese market buying it because it's their guy, right? It's their game, their devs, their flagship. Right? But, like, what's going on here? This was a niche franchise. I don't think the bloggers were ready, right? Because I've seen a lot of really rude headlines.
Oh, yeah, no, and that's really what it comes down to, right? Like, I think I've seen a few that will that have to do with, like, how awful it is and that it's insane that it's doing so much better than Avowed did. I've seen that one.
Did you see the one from The Gamer? I think I posted it on our forum.
Is this the one about the mods?
Where, oh, no.
Having Tiggle Bitties is just the worst thing ever?
I gotta read you this headline, because it...
Oh, please do.
I need to read it verbatim, because I don't think you'll believe me if I wing it. So, from The Gamer, 3 days ago, by Andrew King. Well, by their AI ghostwriter, edited by Andrew King, as you can suspect. Speculate, right? Because ain't no way these people are fucking real. why isn't Monster Hunter Wilds flopping like Dragon Age the Veilguard?
Why? Oh, right. I did read that one.
Because they make an argument that Dragon Age the Veilguard, like, simplified a lot of what makes Dragon Age Dragon Age, which is very dismissive of the problems with Veilguard, because a lot of the problems was the writing, right? That was the chief issue, was how bad the writing was and how, like, disrespectful it is of your previous choices of the previous games, right? It kind of shits on it. In fact,
wait, are you talking about Veilguard?
Yeah.
Like, I was going to say Veilguard doesn't that, whatever, like, there might as well have not even been previous games.
Yeah.
Like, and it's the He-Man thing all over again, right? Like, the, what was it? It wasn't Kevin Feige. Who's that piece of shit?
Kevin Smith.
Yeah, that one. Yeah. But yeah, it's the Kevin Smith He-Man thing all over again, right? Where he's like, well, I can't actually write something people want to see, so I'm going to hijack a popular franchise and then write it the way I want it.
Like, dude, like, 90s and early 2000s, Kevin Smith would roast the shit out of modern Kevin Smith.
Like, modern Kevin Smith, like, I wish we could go back to when being a sellout was a bitch move. Like, just straight up, I wish we could go back to that. Like, 90s grunge artists had it fucking right, turns out.
Mm-hmm.
Nirvana would just, they would be killing it right now, man. Well, actually, no. They would probably be hosting some garbage show.
Award show?
Sing. Yeah, oh, no, I was thinking some kind of vocal talent show.
Ooh.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
Nirvana would sound like a Nirvana cover band at this point.
Ended before their time. And it sucks, but, you know, their music lives on forever, unblemished.
True.
Can't say the same for a lot of other acts that went on too long.
One of those moments where it's a silver lining.
So it's like, while Monster Hunter Wilds does a lot of simplification of systems and quality of life, right? I don't know if I'd say the same about Dragon Age Vanguard. Again, I didn't play that one because I don't like Dragon Age, right? But, like, everything I hear about that game is pretty fucking negative from the people that like Dragon Age. Because
It
ruins the story, and it's not fun to play, and the writing is really bad. So it's like, get good, I guess. But, like, you know, bloggers like The Gamer just can't accept it, right? And then, like, there's been a myriad of tweets. I didn't come prepared to this episode because we're recording at an unusual time, right? But there's been a variety of tweets on the subject of Monster Hunter that have been, like, a bit of a whiplash, right? I wish I had examples ready to show, but I've seen people, like, shit on the blacksmith lady for having the undercut side of her hair. Like, that's, like, a woke thing, and it's like, what?
We've passed that point, man.
Bro, someone want to call up Skrillex and let him know.
Seriously. I mean, his hairstyle is now different. However, it's like...
But, like, I remember we used to make fun of that as being, like, the new age haircut. But, like, that's, like, 10 years old now, too, isn't it?
Yeah, it's, like, not weird anymore. People get undercuts and fades all the time. Like, it's not weird. And then, like, I saw somebody make fun of the character Olivia. Like, they're ugly or, like, a butch lesbian or something. And I'm like, what are you smoking?
Bro, she would break my skull by patting me.
Have you seen this character that I'm talking about?
I have not seen Olivia, no.
Okay, hold on.
I've seen the blacksmith.
Yeah, everyone's seen her because it was like, oh my god, hello. But hold up. I want to show you a couple pictures of this woman in-game. And I want your unfiltered opinion. Just give me a sec to look it up. All right. So have a look at these. And tell me your first impressions of this character.
She's clearly a paladin or something like that to me. Oh, there's a paladin. Oh, I see. Muscle mommy.
An NPC hunter that if you fire an SOS flare, she is one of the NPCs that will help you if no player joins your quest. Or if you're playing offline.
Watching her give that palico that bowl. Yeah, she looks like a hunter.
I had to show you the food scene because she takes her armor off in that one. Right? But it's like...
Oh, well, that's important.
There were people on the internet that apparently have brains that are saying that this woman is hideous, that this is wokeness in action, and it's like, bro.
Yeah, that whole thing has... It's not that it's going full circle, per se. It's that there's just, like...
I feel like the pendulum has swung the wrong way. Like,
well...
Because they were right to make fun of characters like this in games like The Last of Us Part 2, right? That
she looks better than Abby, I'll give you that.
100%. Right.
So I think the issue that ends up happening for a lot of people, and, you know, you can correct me if you think I'm wrong, but I think people like being the ones to be punching down. Or, not punching down, sorry, punching up. And so, like, Grums, for instance, because I can't go a single episode without mentioning that fucker.
I think he might have been the guy that made this claim, but I don't remember, and I don't want to look at his account.
Yeah. So I can't go a single episode without mentioning this guy. But the whole problem is, like, he got to be the good guy for a while. Because basically, for, like, how long? Like, I would say since he stopped working at Blizzard, anytime you mention Grums, it would be like, who? Or it would be, oh yeah, that guy who's not actually making the game he said he's making. Like, that's about it. And suddenly he got to be popular and important again.
Yeah, he stood up for the right thing, like, one time. We even agreed with him on some shit. And he's just trying everything that he can to hold on to that relevancy, probably for money.
Oh, it has to be for money, because, like, what else has he got? Genuinely, like, he's not making that fucking game. Like, Upper Echelon was not kind when Grums let him do that ride-along playtest or fucking whatever. And gave him carte blanche to be honest. And it wasn't kind. But, like, he's the charge of everything is woke. Like, if it's not straight, white, male, and it's a fucking DEI. You know the one that I'm really looking forward to, at least watching somebody play it on YouTube, is that, what is it? South of whatever. I've heard
South of Midnight? Screaming.
South of Midnight. I've heard people scream, whoa, a fucking course, it's a bunch of black people. It's in Creole area of Louisiana. It's in the fucking swamps in Louisiana or Florida. I can't tell which, honestly, because it's basically the same place in two different states, right? Like, the swamps in the south.
They just need to airdrop in a bunch of, like, modern-day New Yorkers and be like, all right, it's not woke anymore. We've achieved diversity. Like, that's not what they're making. Like,
no, they're... yeah, South of Midnight, of course it's black people, because those are the people who these stories revolve around. If we had a bunch of white people doing that, like, in that game, like, as the player character and all that shit, it would be just as disingenuous as going to, say, I don't know, Japan and making a samurai a black man.
And I have I have a really good segue to get back to Monster Hunter, but I'm going to hold on to it for a second. Victim, do you remember what Ubisoft did to that guy?
Wait, what?
To Crumbs.
Oh, fuck.
You were telling me the other day, and I looked it up, and it was 100% real.
Oh, the Assassin's fucking Ubisoft's it's probably one of their interns. One of their Twitter. They made a post, and he tried to roast them, and they got him pretty fucking good, dude. I did not expect that. The clapback was so fucking funny.
It was something along the lines of, "Here's an advertisement for our new game," and then the comments were locked because they do that now, right?
Right.
And then
that's
It is a good choice. He quote tweets them, and it's like he was making fun of how they locked the comments. How could top publishers do this? And their reply was like, "Thank you for calling us a top publisher. Please buy our game."
Yeah. They're basically like, oh, we're so thankful you think of us that way. Anyways,
it was so funny. I'm still not buying their $120 video game, but, you know, good on them.
Never expected Ubisoft of all fucking people to clap back like that, though. It's just like, what the fuck am I reading?
I mean, yeah, but that's good of them. Like, that's good to let their interns be cut loose.
Yeah, I mean, I've mentioned it before that if Assassin's Creed Shadows comes out and it's actually fucking good and it's like it's everything we really wanted, and you know all of our worries are gone and they listen to our feedback and changed shit, at least for the most part. Obviously, I think there comes a point in time in game development where you just have to throw your hands up and be like, well, it's just gonna be fucked forever now, whatever. But if they fix a large part of it, I'm not gonna sit here and be like, oh, but I'm supposed to hate it, so I'm gonna hate it. It's like, nah, if they fix it and it's good, I may not play it still. Just because I haven't played Assassin's Creed in a long time, I'll at least admit that, okay, it looks a lot better now. If it does look a lot better now, I'm not going to be a hypocrite.
Notice we don't talk shit about Mirage, because that's what that game was supposed to be.
Oh,
a return to form.
Honestly, I feel like a hypocrite for not buying Mirage. It's the, same. It's the thing that I bitched, I moaned, and I begged and pleaded and said, please make one of these again. And they finally did, and I didn't even bother to play it. You know, it might suck ass. It might be the worst fucking game they've ever released. I asked them directly to make it, and they did. And that feels kind of dumb on my part not to. And you know what? When I'm in the mood for a stealth game in the future, instead of going backwards, maybe I will buy it and try it.
Well, Ubisoft will still be able to, or have to be able to sell you the game by that point, though.
Well, we're going to hope that whoever gets the rights
puts
Tencent it on sale.
Buys,
yeah. Maybe Tencent will put it on sale for me.
Yeah, maybe they'll buy Discord at the same time when it goes public. They can give a sale for Discord Nitro holders.
They've been eyeing it. I wholeheartedly believe that they will.
Like, Ubisoft game design for Assassin's Creed, like, it feels like they're falling into the trap that Final Fantasy fell into for a while. Because, like, yeah, sure, we didn't buy their $70 video game that was supposedly everything we wanted. Oops. Now they're selling us a $120 video game that is absolutely not what we want. Right? Yeah. And it's like, okay, well, they're just going to close if we don't buy this one. And I'm not going to buy it. Let's say this was a popular franchise like Final Fantasy that had a little bit more diehard fans, right? I don't think there's diehard Assassin's Creed fans. I don't believe they exist. Like, Assassin's Creed is nobody's number one. Not anymore.
Not anymore.
So
no.
It's like, all right. In the case of Final Fantasy, right? Final Fantasy X was very linear. You know, it was an adventure where you're not supposed to backtrack. You could. They let you. But you're not supposed to, right?
Ironically, that fits the writing.
I know.
Not looking backwards.
We ignore 11 because it was an MMO. 12 was very open and had a ton of side content, hundreds of hours of content, right? Way more to do than 10, right? You know, there was criticism plenty of, you know, well-founded criticism. It's my favorite, but still, right? Yeah, it's top five for me.
I will also be the first person to admit that, okay, the story ends probably like at least a solid like 10 to 15 hours before it should. Mm-hmm. And there's some characters that need 100% more screen time. But like, it still is a solid fucking game.
It's just, you got to put yourself in the mindset that Gavranth, the villain, right? The side villain, is the main mm-hmm. character, the same way Darth Vader is the main character of Star Wars. Because like, he gets all the screen time. He is the main character. The story is about him, right? Everyone else is like second fiddle, but you're playing as these other characters. It's like, oh man, I really wish Luke Skywalker and Han Solo got more screen time to explain their like history and motivations. You don't get it. You'll get plenty for Darth Vader though, right? That's kind of what they were going for because it was a direct inspo. But besides the point, there was a huge course correction between 12 and 13. 13 is a totally different kind of game. Extremely linear. People make fun of it as the hallway game, right? We ignore 14 because it's an MMO. In 15, it's even more open than 12. It's straight up open world. Two giant zones and a couple of towns, one of which is way more detailed than the other. Well, three if you count the Royal Edition where they added the final dungeon.
Well, you know, 15 had a long and storied oopsie doodle history.
Yeah, we shouldn't talk about that. But, and then 16, like, they really drove a better balance. 16, I really wish the major zones were connected so you can walk from one end of the world to the other. You can't do that, but it looks like you could. I feel like they were going to do it and drop that. However, the zones that are there are very open, very reminds me a lot of 12 in that regard, not 15. However, you know, it's a pendulum swing still.
Yeah.
It is a little bit more restricted and it's a lot more arcadey, but like it was also really fun and good in its own ways. So I feel like Assassin's Creed is falling for the same trap, but they don't have Square Enix money nor fandom. And they don't have successful other franchises to subsidize their failures. Right? Yeah. Assassin's Creed is supposed to subsidize the other failures of the studio. So it's like, they're just kind of fucked.
Well, and part of what it is, too, is like, they've got other games that were mildly successful, but like, probably not as successful as a AAA studio needs. Like, their Prince of Persia remake, right?
Yeah. It's like, that game was fine, but how many people... did it cost? How many wages, like, did it cost to actually produce that? And did they make any money on it? Because they're a big bloated studio with way too many developers. Not that I wish these people, you know, layoffs. Layoffs are tragic. I hate that, right? But they shouldn't have hired all those people. They're setting them up for failure and for layoffs. They should have made do with fewer.
Well, and that's honestly kind of, you know, I've heard about it before. I forget who came up with the, like, actual numbers and stuff, but, like, that, you know... the number of people in an office that are actually useless kind of metric, right? Mm-hmm. And the, like, it's something like, and it gets bigger the larger the company gets, right? Like the number of people who don't do shit for the company. And so a company the size of Ubisoft has a ton of people who don't do shit. I've heard that larger studios like that, I can't speak for certain because, you know, this is not... something I retained the location of for the knowledge, so I'm like, I've heard this. But it's something like 12 people have to approve literally any change you make. And so by the time that you get all 12 approvals, that could be like 2 months down the road.
I believe it. I go through stuff like that at work. I just don't think people are mad enough at these game studios that do all these layoffs. Like, yeah, sure, you could be mad at layoffs, but people are mad for the wrong reasons, right? They're mad that they laid them off. They're mad that they don't have the money to pay all these people. But like, they're not mad that they overhired or they hired more than they needed or more than they could afford, right? Like, for example, my workplace, which will not be named, recently went through a layoff. I survived, of course, but like, there are people that were my friends that weren't doing good work that had to be let go, right? And who knows, I could be next. Like, who knows what the future may hold?
Yeah, I mean, Riot Games said the same thing. Like, people looked at when they did their big layoffs a bit ago, looked at it, and there were several people in there that were like, why are these the people you're laying off? These are the people kind of carrying their fields for you right now. And the only real answer that came back was they didn't actually look at what they did. They just looked at how much money it cost to have
them. Well, right, it's a cost-reward rate thing, but... you know, there are people that will never be laid off, right? Like, these are also people who, unironically, don't do anything for the product. they probably do things at the company. Like, make no mistake, the C-suite employees, as much as people want to, you know, bash them, have a purpose. Like, and they are the reason that companies literally function at all once they're that size. However, they don't make a product. Like, the C-suite employees need the other worker bees to do their job. It's an impossible, like, it's a symbiotic relationship, really, is what it comes down to. And if you don't have, but if you have to fire all the talent that makes the game, per se, for just using game studios as an example, then the C-suite employees are, what, just going to twiddle their thumbs? Like, a lot of them, if they ever were coders, haven't been coding in years. They probably don't know the current systems anymore. It wouldn't surprise me if they didn't anyways. Because, like, yeah, the language may not change, but the tools that we use change, right? Like, Photoshop in the 1990s looks very different to Photoshop in 2025.
Those skills don't translate.
Like there are some things that are similar. Like, I think, weirdly, engineering got it right. I'm pretty sure most CAD softwares are pretty much the same, just with more quality of life and more AI help. Absolutely not for the lion's share of things. It does not translate. And also, like, you haven't flexed those coding muscles in years.
Yeah, like, what are you going to do? Just prompt an AI to do it for you? Like, you could try it.
Some studios are. Like, I mean, shit, that, in a lot of ways, that's why, you know, people have been shitting on Unreal 5 and NVIDIA over the past few years, right? Like, with because they're doing a ton of, like, how NVIDIA gets a lot of their numbers now, it's because it's entirely reliant on AI. And, you know, I've seen the breakdown video of actually how shit Unreal 5 is with, basically it's just, in fairness, Unreal 5, I've heard from people who I trust as designers to be like, oh no, Unreal 5 is fine if you use it correctly. The problem is a lot of people filling the warm seat was left behind by the previous coder who had to work a lot, don't know how to do their fucking job.
Yeah.
You know, this is one of the parts where I'm like, yeah, I gotta agree with Grump. Because, like, that was the major blowback of DEI hiring. There's a key one, the DEI hiring. I'm all for organic employee-run diversity and inclusion, because that's a way to celebrate your cultures. The office, because it's employee-run. But the hiring, DEI hiring mandates and shit really...
Yeah, especially if you have, like, a studio, you have a set amount of talent that you've picked for a reason, right? The talent. And then to meet these quotas, to get these rewards from these other companies, you have to create a bunch of bullshit positions and then fill them. Right. But then they were bullshit positions. You don't need them to do that work. So it's like, it's a catch 22, right? It's like, okay, it's time to lay people off. And, like, you know, they're going to be the first ones to go because they were for show. They were to receive a grant, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
And it's like, I guess if you, you know, got some good value out of the work that those people did do, I don't know what these bullshit positions entail, right? Like, are they literally twiddling their thumbs or are they like, trying to contribute when onto a bloated team? I don't know, right? It depends on the scenario. But, like, they choose who they let go, right? Yeah, sure, it's a number to somebody. That's what happened with Riot, right? But, like, they have a lot of influence over, like, who gets to get laid off.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
They know who their top performers are.
Right. That's kind of why, like, I don't know. I have a lot of questions about how that hiring really got started. Like, I understand fundamentally why, right? Like, there are a lot of outside pressure to say, hey, if you don't hire more diverse voices, then, you know, your company will fail, right? Like, we will not buy your product. And the irony is, these are people who weren't buying the products anyways.
Yeah, I remember Hogwarts Legacy. Yeah.
I don't even know how you would expect someone to even fucking know. Yeah.
Well,
like, who the fuck's, like the average gamer is not going to comb through your fucking employee list before they buy your game.
Well, and that's part of the thing.
But they might catch wind of a viral boycott effort, right?
Right. Oh, yeah, we did catch wind of a viral boycott effort for Hogwarts Legacy and got an extra copy just to fuck them.
Yeah.
I didn't actually buy an extra copy, but I did buy my one copy.
Yeah.
You know what? Game.
You might not have done it if it wasn't for the incessant whining that they did.
Yeah, I don't know if I would have for certain, but I was wildly intrigued by how could the good game could have been, and it turned out to be a pretty good game. Best game ever. I think I make it my game of the year that year.
No, you didn't.
I think Armored Core beat it for my game of the year because I'm still. If we had had the like a halfway through the year awards, it definitely would have been like top in the first half of the year. Definitely my runner up from that year because it was a very solid game that fit the atmosphere and vibe. Mm-hmm. The little Ubisoft open worldy, absolutely was. Whatever, I had a good time.
So, I have a proposal.
I think, is it a modest proposal?
Well, I'm getting a lot of really weird audio from the mumble server. I don't know if you guys are hearing it too.
A little bit.
It's a little choppy, and I don't think it's your fault. I think I need to restart the server. But we've been going for a bit, and we're recording at a weird time. I think a shorter episode is in order. So why don't we cut it off here? But do you have any final thoughts? This is the obligatory Monster Hunter episode turned out. Surprise, everyone.
No, Rise was a different Monster Hunter.
Surprise. See, my audio's cut now. I'm having a shitload of fun, and I don't see any reason why I would recommend against anybody buying it. Like, I realize it's a $70 video game, and going by, like, poor little boy on Christmas logic that I grew up with, it's like, yeah, buy it. Like, don't wait.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, honestly, if you're gonna wait, don't wait for the expansion, because I feel like if you do that, you're just not going to enjoy the game. You're like, at least a chunk of your enjoyment is going to be stripped of you. I would say maybe at best wait for some of the title updates. It's definitely worth the money, but it will be definitely worth the money in like a couple months.
Yeah, but if you buy it now, you can get ready for those title updates and beat the shit out of those monsters. This has been the Melomancy Podcast, episode 102. See you guys next time.
Toodaloo.